Welcome to the Dogevity Show. If you love your dogs as family like we do, then you'll love the inspirational stories, real dogs, real people, real world-class advice from experts across the globe. So if you've come here to hear a tall tale or a little one wag, you're in the right place. Here's your host,
Who Let the Dogs Out?
Wendy LaTorre.
Who let the dogs out?
Welcome to the Dogevity Podcast. I'm Wendy LaTorre, your host. And I'm sure most of you, like me, have your doggos pretty close by. It's been storming here. So Hugo's at my feet. Prana's rolling over on the carpet. And I am really excited about my guest today because she is a person who believes in training kindly. So I have Shannon Riley Quainer, right? Internationally sought speaker. She has been a pet lover all of her life, a dog trainer for over 20 years. And she has spent her life observing, caring for, and training animals of all kind. Shannon created Truly Force-Free Animal Training in 2015 so that anyone, anywhere could have access to force-free, positive reinforcement animal training. In 2018, Shannon published The Evolution of Dog Training, available in audio, print, and ebook. Shannon, I just told you before that we started recording here that I am so curious about this because having been the mom to six Great Danes over a 30-year period of time, I was always told to train with a pinch collar. I hated doing it, but they were very big dogs, and ultimately they were very sweet dogs, and I could walk them with no collars. Mm-hmm. But tell me about this evolution of training. What is this about?
So I too, just like you, when I first started training when I was a teenager, you know, I had a lab. I'd grown up with Staffordshire Terriers, but we didn't train them. But I trained, so when I was a teenager, after they passed, we got a lab. And I went to the training class. I loved it. I love behavior. I love training from a teenager. And the teacher was like, you have to put this choke collar on. And I didn't really like it, but I, you know, I'm not going to question an adult and the teacher. So I did it. And then, you know, she was a lab puppy. So sometimes she got a little out of control. And one time the teacher said, you have to put this pinch collar on. And I tried it. I tried a friend's, somebody else that was in the class, because I didn't want to go buy one. I didn't like it. It made me uncomfortable. I put it on my lab and she screamed when I did the first pop. And I said, sorry, I'm not using that ever again. Gave them back. And then at like 16 years old, totally don't know what I'm doing, started thinking there's got to be better ways. So when I still didn't know anything about positive training. And it really wasn't a thing then because I was in the 90s. But what happened is I started training her every day and used praise and good girl. And, you know, and I was using treats, but not very effectively, but I got it every morning before I went to school. I trained her and it was the bond that we were building was so strong that my goal, the reason I trained her every single day was I wanted to get that stupid pinch choke chain off of her. And by the time we finished at a year, the trainer was like, oh, you need to do shows, which I had no interest in. But I could walk her off leash anywhere. She healed perfectly. She did all the obedience stuff. So if she wanted to compete. And sometimes I put the choke chain on because I had to, because that was what that class required, but I didn't use it. And if I walked around the neighborhood, I was using flat collars. And so that was kind of how I started going, I don't know if I really believe in this, but I'm a high school student. So fast forward, I go to school. I thought I wanted to be a vet, ended up becoming a vet tech. And I got my own dog. Well, I was working in zoos. I worked in zoos and I saw, well, they don't train the birds with punishment and they don't train the whales with punishment and they don't train the lion. Well, sometimes the cats got a little punishment, but a lot of it was for the meat. And I started just going, there's something to this, but I was still in college. So, and I was working more pre-vet and my vet tech. So then I go to vet tech school. And part of our vet tech school is we have a colony of dogs that we have to train. And the teacher knew nothing. And she's like, everybody has to have these pinch collars. And they knew I already did some training. So they gave me a really difficult pit bull named Dolly. And she was mouthy and she was out of control. And I was not comfortable putting this choke chain on. And I was at a dilemma because I was going against my teacher, but I also trying to follow my heart. At that time, Gentle Leaders came out. And so I asked the school to buy, can you buy Gentle Leaders? And we start, I used Gentle Leaders on her, which were at least a step in the right direction. And
what is,
then
what is that? Explain what
a Gentle Leader is. It was the first transition we really had from choke chain and pinch collar to help control these wild dogs. They're the nose, they're the head halters. Oh, so okay. They go over their nose, there's halties. But at that time it was the Gentle Leader, it was the first one.
Okay.
And I used that and it was still a little aversive because particularly for Dolly, she was all over the place. And so, you know, it would pull her nose, she pawed, but that was better for me than hurting her neck. Then I fast forward to getting married and getting our very first dog as a couple. And I get a flat coat retriever who was as sweet as pie, but then became a dog aggressive, which got me into, I got to learn something else. Because if you popped her with a pinch collar when she was being aggressive towards another dog, it got worse. Oh. And I went, oh. So by then I was a vet tech. And I went to my first veterinary conference. And there was a behavior person talking because it was just getting into veterinarians, nothing. They still don't know a lot about behavior, but they knew nothing. And Dr. Karen Overall was doing a seminar and I sat in it. It was for vets, but I sat in it. And she said, aggression doesn't treat aggression. And I was like, oh, you know, I started, the light bulb went off and I started digging deep on how can I not only train everyday dogs, but also train my reactive dog to not be reactive. And I started learning that you could, you know, use positive reinforcement. So you treat the things you like. You, the more, just like us, you know, if somebody gives you $1,000 to go to the grocery store just to get milk, you would be like, do you want me to go get you some more milk? Do you want me to go get you some more milk? I mean, you would, if you could do that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, instead of, you know, always looking at, you know, oh, we're out of milk. It's your fault. Like, that's not going to make you want to go get milk after a while. So finding, you know, ways of making training fun. So Sadie was my flat coat. And then I got Buster, our Jack Russell, who, that's how we found out she was reactive. She started kind of attacking him. So I had to deal with this household, but I found the more for either of them that I was aggressive. So if I was doing what the trainers were saying, you know, and alpha roll them and do all this, I was just making the problem worse. And So then I started learning about all these things and I started following Karen Pryor and Dr. Overall and really started to dig into positive reinforcement training. And at that time I lived in Northern California, in Napa and San Francisco, Berkeley, you know, in Dunbar, there were, it was like the hotbed of positive reinforcement. So I was also really blessed to be in a place where I had access to all these people who were teaching us about positive reinforcement. So I adopted Buster in 1996. I think I used a pinch or choke, you know, kind of thing on him for about 4 months. And I have never used one on any dog since. And I work with aggressive dogs, fearful dogs, anxious dogs, agility dogs, hyper dogs. And because I just found that if we can get to fill their needs, get their needs met, and have some more empathy and compassion, we can figure out why they're behaving the way they're behaving, you know, and instead of punishing them for all these behaviors that we don't like, I could encourage the behaviors I liked, teach how I want them to be. More like I'm a mom of three teenagers. You know, reinforcement goes a lot farther than punishing. You know, you can do some punishment, but after a while, your relationship starts to get ruined and, you know, they don't want to be around you. But if you start reinforcing them, my kids help me set up my agility courses every week. When they, the very day one, I said, after this, we're going to go get a Starbucks. Now they're like, when are we going to go set up the agility course? You know, because instead of saying, you have to do this, this is, you know, blah, I just reinforce them. And then kind of crazy life, you know, I started this with dogs, then became a parent and started having coaches who were starting to teach me how to, because I was raised old school, you know, punishment, you know, and how to be a better parent and looking, what is, if your child is having a problem, there's a need that's not being met. What is that need? And then I started translating that into dogs. Like sometimes when a border collie's in an apartment and they're chewing up everything, people punish them for chewing it up. And I go, Well, your border collie's bored. They need mental stimulation. You fix that need and you get that need met. And sometimes the unwanted behaviors just go away, you know, because we figure out how to help them that way. So that's kind of how I started. And then, you know, I learned about, I was married. So I did relationship psychology and learned about emotional bank accounts. The more you put in a bank account, if there's a withdrawal. So, you know, if I've trained my dog positively and then I have to take him to the vet and they have to have some terrible procedure, that's going to be a withdrawal from my bank account. You know, it's going to be like, Mom, you took me to the vet and it was really scary. But if my bank account, like a human, like a money bank account is full, that withdrawal is minor. But if my bank account is empty, that withdrawal could put me into debt. So it really made me, I was no longer emotionally in debt with my dogs. I mean, sometimes I have to do things, you know, they've got a something, you know, something between their toes and I got to pull it out and it's going to hurt. But because we have a strong relationship, it doesn't ruin our relationship. Does that kind of make sense?
It so makes sense. I mean, when you were talking, I think about situations with, I told you I have the Sunrise Dog Group that I'm involved with. And we have one dog in particular that is, can be aggressive to other dogs. Not very, he's kind of pushy, not biting. Okay. Pushy. And when he's off leash and he's with the dogs, he's fine. But when another dog comes up and he gets leashed and the other dog is leashed and they're pulled back, he gets more aggressive. You know, so if we can move them to the off leash where they're nice to each other, they're not near as aggressive. So that makes sense when you're jerking them away.
Is that then all of a sudden you're adding fear?
Oh, you're adding, you're definitely adding fear. And then the other thing you said is whales. I love that analogy. Birds and whales and dolphins, they're all trained with positive reinforcement.
Exactly. Right?
So why are we doing, why did it evolve this way? Isn't it very interesting to me?
Yeah. And that's why I wrote the book. So the evolution of dog training came about because I was always, I never judge my clients. So they come to me from all places. Sometimes that's the only way they know is punishment based because that's what they did. So I started learning that we call it crossover. When you cross over from traditional training to positive reentraining, we call it a crossover. So I'm a crossover trainer. I trained the other way and I switched. So I started figuring out that the clients that I could cross over were ones that I could say, you know, we started this kind of training in World War I, 100 years ago.
Really?
That's how choke chain started with Colonel Most. It was in Germany. They were training the German shepherds and it was all punishment based. And Colonel Most had this manual that was how to train dogs. And it was like, there is a quote from my book and it basically says, you know, they have to obey you. And if they don't obey you, you know, you have to, you know, make them submit to you. And, you know, it was crazy. So that hook took, that's one reason why this all started. So it all started because, you know, 100 years ago, they started training this way. I always tell people, would you still go to a doctor who used leeches? Like, no, we have evolved
over analogy.
All of these years. So then the other thing that happened was there was a study on wolves and they were studying wolves and they took them from the wild and put them in captivity and watched them. And they did a study and they made all these generalizations that the way the wolves were acting would have the just said, well, dogs are the same. So of course, if a wolf acts this way, a dog's going to act this way as well. Well, one, we know wolves and dogs are totally different creatures.
Right.
They're, you know, I mean, your doodle has nothing, you know, is very different than a wolf.
Right.
So the scientists who did that study over the years actually said, we don't believe in that study anymore because they were putting these wolves, taking wolves from all different packs and putting them into an artificial environment, like a zoo. But when you observed wolves in the wild, they were totally different. You know, they had more space. They had packs. They had the alpha male wasn't out to hurt everybody and dominate everybody. It was more like a dad and a mom situation, not a dominant dictator. And so we, of course, as humans have such egos about ourselves that we were like, well, if our dog thinks other dogs are alpha, then I must be alpha over my dog. Our dogs don't see us that way. We're the providers. We're either the healthy provider and the happy, safe provider, or we're the not safe provider. And they can either come to us because they trust us or they cower at us because, or they, you know, obey us because they're afraid to make a mistake. you know? Yeah. And so it's all these old science, old information that is humans like to hold on to that because it makes, gives us power, you know, gives us ego. It boosts our ego to think that I'm alpha over my dog. That's why a lot of men are like, I'm alpha over my dog. Not all, but, and not all. And there are women who still believe I'm alpha over my dog, but that has been totally debunked so many times in science. But it's a good story, you know, and a good story lasts a lot longer than truth sometimes.
It's so wild. It's like the seed started with this guy in World War One. Did you say it was?
Yes.
In Germany.
Yes.
And from there, all of this nasty, mean training.
Exactly.
The choke is just, it is horrible.
And we know that now with science, we do necropsies on dogs afterwards. And the neck is such a fragile part of a dog's body. That's where they kill each other. I mean, that's the place, right. The most vulnerable place.
You're right.
So yeah. Now we're putting a chain here. So the trachea and the esophagus get damaged. The spinal cord gets damaged every time we pop. And so my lab that I trained in high school, as she got older, she lived to be 14 as a yellow lab.
That's good.
She had trachea collapse or laryngeal paralysis. So her larynx would collapse. She had esophageal damage. So she had to eat on a raised bowl. And she had neck spinal issues with her spinal cord. And I didn't even like jerk around because I was just a teenager. But that was just with those pops over and over, I'm sure. And I, you know, went through periods of guilt when I started learning this. But I know that that's not it. And so we now have science to show that not only do we know the science isn't true, that punishment works better than positive, but we also now have the science that we're injuring our dog's necks when we use this.
Lordy,
but it's
terrible.
But people just, humans kind of like, well, I always tell my client, I just had a client yesterday that I said, humans look for all the negatives. That's what we look for. That's why we watch the news and let all this bad news in the background. You know, we'll have the TV on, or we like to hear the negative. It's just part of how humans are made, unless you really work hard to look for the positive things. Mm-hmm. So I was just at my client's house and I'm like, reinforce him for that. And they're like, but why? He's not doing anything. I said, I know, because you complain that he barks, but you're only giving him attention and yelling at him when he barks, but you don't tell him he's a good boy when he's quiet.
Oh my gosh, that makes such sense.
So
that
then
makes such sense.
Negative attention can be more powerful than no attention. So, sure. You know, you yell at them for barking. Well, they're like, well, at least I got something out of her. But you do nothing when they're quiet. It just doesn't really make a lot of sense that way.
If you have been using a pinch or I don't know anybody who uses a choke, but I wouldn't like them if they did. But anyway, a pinch or a restraining.
Or electric, big shock
collars. Oh my God, the shock collars. Those have to be horrible.
Yes, same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So how would you transition from that into the non-force?
Well, what I tell a lot of my clients is to get a well-fitting harness first, because the harness takes all the pressure off of the neck over, you know, to the chest, where we've got the rib cage that's protecting the heart. So there's, you know, a lot there that's more protective. My dogs wear collars, but unless we're just walking like to and from the car, just in case they see a squirrel, they walk nice, but you know, they see something, I don't want to injure their neck. So I have a well-fitting harness, and there's tons of harnesses out there. Getting a well-fitted harness first so that you take away that choke chain or pinch collar, whatever. So that's the first place, is because everybody gets scared, but I can't control my dog if I take that away, you know? And that's another human thing. We like to control everything. We want it, and we want it to be perfect, and we want it to be now. So one thing that's different about sometimes, not always, but sometimes positive reinforcement may take a little longer than a punishment, especially if you have a fearful dog, because you got a fearful dog, you pop them, you shut them down, you know, you pop them with the leash.
Right.
So teaching them to take treats and be reinforced, especially if you have a history of that punishment, they're a little like, what are you up to? And they might not have a lot of trust.
Sure.
So then what you do is find something they really love. I like to use treats purely because it's easy. You hand them a treat, they eat it, it's gone. You know, you can use toys, but it slows your training down only because, you know, if you're tugging, you could have given five treats in that period of, you know, tugging. So you can get more repetitions in if you're using treats, but finding something they really want to work for. No one would go on the show Survivor if the reward was not $1 million. Who's going to eat worms and live on a deserted island if you weren't going to potentially win $1 million? You know, if they were like, it's $1,000 prize, people would be like, no, thank you. You know, you have to find something that they like too. So, you know, I also tell my clients, because they'll say, well, this, I went to the store and bought this treat and they say all dogs like it. And I'm like, well, yeah, a lot of people like lemon meringue, but I don't really like lemon meringue pie, but I really like chocolate. So finding what, you know, your dog likes, and then just relearning how to teach things without using force. So that is why I started Truly Force Free Animal Training too, because I would go to all these different conferences, vet or dog training, and we'd be talking about positive reinforcement, especially in veterinary conferences. And they'd say, but Shannon, there's nobody in my area that trains this way. How do I get my clients to see a positive reinforcement trainer if there's nobody in the area? Right. And, you know, with the internet coming, you know, now I was like, you know what? It doesn't have to be in person. Like, you can learn things online, YouTube and all of these shows that are getting online. So I started coming up with Truly Force Free Animal Training as a website. So anyone, anywhere could use positive force free training. And so that's how I started the website.
So I saw on your website a thing with a clicker.
Yes.
What's the clicker thing?
So the clicker is, that is something that we've been using for a long time, but it of course didn't get as popular as the choke chain and pinch collar because it, you know, didn't give you that control, but it's the same idea if we go back to the whales. So when whales and dolphins or birds are flying in those shows or jumping through the water, the trainers will blow a whistle. The right. whistle is a marker that marks the behavior that the trainer liked. And that tells the animal, that is the behavior I like, and you're going to earn a reward for that, a treat for, you know, most of the time it's a treat, but it can be petting. It could be, you know, verbal. But so if we use the whales, just make people really see, you know, this. So the whale jumps and touches the ball with its nose up in the air, and right as its nose touches that ball, trainer whistles, whale lands and comes swimming back to the trainer. He or she gives a whole bunch of fish, maybe pets its tongue, you know, does something that the whale likes. And then they go back. So take that to dogs or cats or horses. I've trained all of them and my parrots, you know, with a clicker. The click is a little easier than the whistle. It's not quite as obtrusive if you're out in the world. Right. And you click, and that marks the behavior you like. So if my dog, I want to teach my dog to sit, I might lure them and use a treat to get them into the sit. And as soon as their rear end hits the ground, I click. I always tell my clients, pretend like you're taking a picture of the behavior you like. So click, and then you're going to get a treat. The click is a promise that a reward is coming. So a treat is coming in this case. And then they start to figure out that when they hear the click, they did a right behavior. And so then they almost want you to click, you know, like, okay, what can I do to click? And I love to tell the story of, I taught my lab, had to put his head down, you know, on his paws like this. And he always did it when I was getting ready for bed. So I'd be sitting on the end of my bed. He was on his dog bed and he'd be watching me, you know, as loving labs do. And then he put his head down and I wanted to capture that behavior. So I hid in my robe or whatever I had, you know, pockets, some treats and my clicker. He's staring at me and his head hit the bottom and I clicked and I gave him a treat. The first time he was like, okay, sure. Mom gave me a free treat. I don't know what I did, but that was awesome. And so then he gets back and he's comfortable and he's looking at me, gets kind of bored, puts his head down. I click and a treat. And he goes, because he was clicker savvy. He had been clicker trained before. He's like, okay, she doesn't accidentally treat. Do this twice. So something's going on here. And then he sat there and he looked at me and he waited and he put it again and I clicked and I treated and he is, you could see the light bulb go, wait a minute. And then he kind of went real slow, put his chin on his hand, his paws. And I clicked and treated and his whole face lit up. Like, I got it. I figured it out. It kind of reminds me a little of Wordle right now. I don't play Wordle, but my friends who get Wordle on the first try, they're like, I did it. I did it. You know, but it's that reward that you get for doing it right. And, you know, humans don't always need a treat for rewards, but it teaches them to start thinking about what they are doing and what's getting rewarded. And then they're more likely to repeat a behavior that gets a reward. So then they're going to keep wanting to try it.
Okay. So, all right. Couple questions.
Yeah. No, there's going to be so much.
So my lab, which is, she's 10, right? And I have a regular collar on. It's a big knitted thing. And, but I will switch to a harness, but she wants to stop every 30 seconds. Right. And smell. And I have to, and I tug her sometimes on that. So if I used a clicker, and she just came along when I said prana come, and I clicked it at the same time and then gave her a treat, then maybe she would stop every, and potentially. She's 82 pounds.
So that has a lot of potentials to it. So sniffing is very rewarding, one, for dogs, because they're sniffing where everybody's been. And it's not bad to let them sniff. I mean, that's part of their joy of the walk.
Sometimes we're time sensitive.
Totally. And exactly. And then sometimes sniffing can be a sign of anxiety or fear or worry. Without seeing them, I couldn't tell you. But if she doesn't really seem worried about anything else, she's probably just enjoying her walk. And she probably just never really learned, you know, like, this is our serious walk. So what I like to teach my dogs is you do exactly what you said. So when she's walking nice, when she's doing it, that's the behavior you like. So you click and you treat it on the good times. So just like we were talking about, you know, the dog that barks, we yell at them when they bark, but we don't do anything and they're quiet. Try to switch your thinking to, oh my gosh, look how nice she's walking right now between the sniffing. Click and treat during the positive parts. And then if she stops and sniffs, which will happen at first because it's a habit. She's been doing it for a really long time. And then when you call her along, you know, let's go, and she starts coming with you and she takes a couple steps, then you could click and treat again when she's doing good. But having a lab, if you bring hot dogs or some chicken, she may not sniff ever again.
They're always hungry.
Exactly. And that's where the treat value comes in. Finding a treat your dog really likes, because sometimes all I have to do for my clients to have this issue is I say, well, what's their favorite treat? And they're like, hot dogs. And then they don't could care less about any of the sniffing that's happening. But it's okay. Like if you want time that are sniff walks, those are totally appropriate. Go sniff, you know, but if you're on that kind of power walk, bring the treat with you and click and treat when she's walking nicely. And that's how you could get her keep moving forward.
Okay. So I have, I told you about my Sunrise dog group, and they're all off leash and she just wanders around and sniffs and does everything. And we're out there 30 to 45 minutes every morning. Right. So they get plenty of time while he's chasing the balls along with the sheep-a-doodle and the other lab and the other mixed ones and all that. But him, my doodle, he's pretty much Velcro dog. I can walk with him pretty much without a lead, unless a cat goes by.
Okay.
So he got hit by a car because of a cat. I mean, he was okay. He was stunned. The car was going very, very slow. It was a very, very foggy day. And he was in the park with everything else, and a black cat went zipping by and he hit it. What do you do about a situation like that?
Those are, you know, definitely difficult. But when I always look at the whole picture, not just that one, you know, situation. So. Right. When I have a client, a lot of that could very well just be prey drive, which is natural in a dog, you know, to chase something that runs.
Right.
And depending, different breeds obviously have it stronger than others, and individual dogs have the different personality for that. So in that situation, if I had a client, if you were my client and you said, gosh, you know, this happened. One, I would say, okay, is that cat go to that park very often? Because if it's a frequent thing, if it's something you see all the time, then it may be one of those times where if it happened every time. So if I have a client who says, well, every single day we go to the park, he chases this cat. Then I say either he has to be on leash for a while at that park or go to a different park so that you can control it, you know, that situation until you can teach them like a better recall. So I would, you know, because having a good recall gets it. So if they even, no matter what they're taking off on, you can call them back. And that is, takes time and training. It doesn't happen overnight, you know. And when, like, my lab, who I was telling you a little bit about, Captain, right. He was a puppy. I got him since he was born at my house. His mom, I was doing rescue. He was born here with the pregnant mom. So he learned recall, I don't know, super early. But my recall is every time you come to me, you get something really yummy. Might be hot dogs, it might be chicken, you know, every time you come to me. So coming to me is very valuable. Very, you get good stuff. And you get good stuff throughout your whole life. Like, it's not one of those things where, okay, you know how to sit, I'm not going to treat you anymore, because you're choosing all this environment over me, you know, so the squirrel or the cat. So Captain was about a year and a half to 2 years old. We were at a lake. I had him off leash because he was going to the bathroom down this ravine. There was no way I could get to him. He was down a hill. And all of a sudden I saw him go in a point. I had never seen him in a point before. And I was like, Captain. And I always train my dogs what I call the name game. So I teach them, when I say their name, I expect them to look at me. So I do that with the clicker, where I say their name, I click and treat. When they look at me, say their name, click and treat. So Captain, click and treat, you know, Captain, click and treat. So he had that previous learning. And then he also knew leave it, which meant leave it alone. That's not yours. So I said, Captain, he looked at me. I said, leave it. Okay. This, mind you, is down a ravine. We're having a conversation and he's 100 yards away down a ravine. Captain, he looks at me, leave it. He stops. And I said, come. And he ran up the ravine like, okay, Mom. And a huge buck went running the other direction. And no. I was like,
oh my God.
Oh my gosh. All my training worked.
Thank goodness. I mean, in that
exactly.
situation.
And so he came up and we had a party, you know, there were treats involved. There was, you know, screen. Hey, good boy. I mean, he won the lottery that day.
Wow.
But that was also a very powerful learning moment for him, that it's very valuable to come to Mom, even when there's something you're really interested in. So
wow.
Then to stop chasing cats isn't an overnight, you know, it's teaching them to the recall, a solid come, where you say come and they don't even hesitate. They're like, okay, no big deal. I'll come back and see that later if it's okay. But the more your dog practices chasing the cat, which is very reinforcing and very rewarding and very fun for dogs, the better he's going to get at chasing cats. So that's where the leash or a different part comes into hand, because it's hard to train something when there's something else that motivating there.
Right.
So, makes you know, sense. I talk about people like, if you're trying to not say you don't want to drink alcohol anymore, you're not going to go to the bars until you don't have that urge to drink alcohol. You know,
yeah.
So we have to sometimes remove ourselves or remove our dogs from the place where there's too much temptation and too many triggers, until we do the behind the scenes work and do all the stuff that we need to do to get them, so you can have that conversation 100 feet away or 100 yards away.
Well, I don't eat hot dogs, but I'm going to buy some tomorrow.
I know it is. It's like hot dogs, cheese, whatever your dog likes. The reason I always say hot dogs and cheese is because I've been training a really long time. And when I started training dogs, positive training, there was PetSmart and Petco didn't have shelves and shelves and shelves and shelves of training treats. They had milk bones. We had bacon. We had pigs in a blanket and bacon treats, I think. I mean, it was like groceries. You went to the grocery store for
yeah.
And so hot dogs and cheese and string cheese and cheddar cheese are cheaper.
My dogs love cheese. They yeah. love cheese.
And so you bring that and they start to learn. So you can go to the Sunrise Park and you could even start by just having the cheese with you, which means the whole park will love you for a little while. All the dogs will come. But then, you know, teach your dog, come, you know, even on leash, you know, giving him a treat, but you have to break the habit of chasing the cats, which is also potentially a genetic part. So it's a little harder when it's genetic, you know, because it's that drive. But then yeah. you have to do all, you know, it's not overnight. I live in California. So anybody who's in California knows the 405 freeway is like the worst freeway. Yeah, it's the worst freeway.
I know it.
Exactly. And I always tell people, you don't just like turn 16 and drive on the 405. I mean,
right.
You go to your driver's ed, you do the driver's training, you drive in the parking lots, you drive on city streets, you drive on smaller freeways. I mean, I don't think I drove on the 405 until I was in my 30s, because it's a scary freeway.
It is.
And so you have to do the work. And that is a big piece of traditional training versus positive reinforcement. Traditional training appears fast. You pop a dog once and they stop pulling, say. But the trauma that you're doing and the fear and the reason they stop is because they don't want to get hurt again. That's not the relationship I want with my dogs. Yeah. I want my dogs to go, my mom is safe and I'm going to listen and she's going to teach me how she wants me to be in this world.
That's so cool. Yeah. So is there anything that you would want all dog owners to know?
You know, it's such a, I get asked that, you know, the biggest thing I would say is treat your animals with compassion and empathy and yourself, because especially if you're crossing over, because if you're crossing over, you're not going to be good at it at first. You're going to fumble. You're going to make mistakes. But the great thing about positive reinforcement is if you make a mistake and say, you say sit and your dog didn't sit, but you gave the treat or you clicked and treat anyway. So what? They got a free treat. Not that big of a deal. But if you pop a chain and they sat and you pop a chain, now you cause all this trauma to them. So having compassion and empathy as they're learning this because you're going to be learning and they're going to be learning. And I have compassion and empathy for my clients and their dogs, or whatever animal they're working with, because we're trying to figure this out together. And it takes time, we both have to be good at it. My clients always get like frustrated because I'll train their dog and it's like, bam, bam, bam. And they're like, you make it look so easy. And I'm like, I have been doing this for so long. I could do it with my eyes closed. You know, it's like, it's not, I don't think about doing it. They still have to think about, okay, click and then treat. Okay. You know, like they have to go slow and that's okay. As you get better, you get better. And same thing with your dog. They're like, what do you want from me? And we don't speak the same language. So we have to be able to show them what we want them to do. So compassion and empathy, it's in my mission statement of both Truly Force Free Animal Training and my Ventura Pet Wellness business, because that's so important.
You know, it's all about, you want your dogs happy. You want them to live longer. You want them with you longer, right? And it makes so much more sense. The kinder you are, the more gentler your life is with them. You know, it's got to be. It makes so much sense. So you do a course. You also do webinars, right? Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah. So, pre-COVID, I was doing seminars in person right. And all over. But
we all work
right? Exactly. But now I have a bunch of webinars on Truly Force Free Animal Training. And if you sign up for the newsletter, you can get a free webinar, so you can kind of see how they work. I also have a number of courses that I've developed. So good manners. So just basic training. I have some reactive dog, because I work a lot with reactive dogs. I have a whole program on there that is step-by-step, as if you were my private client. I just had somebody videotape me doing exactly what I would tell my clients to do next. And exactly. So you can take it at your own pace. There's a bunch of blogs and video blogs and all kinds of fun things that are free. So I have a kid's corner that was now he's 14, but he was like 9. So he's a little kid training dogs. And so we have that. I'm doing different webinars for different pet professional guilds and all kinds of other, organizations. So, So if you check out trulyforcefree.com, it's all there. And we're always changing it and developing it. I have a development meeting every week. So putting it into Spanish. Now we're translating everything.
Oh, fantastic.
So even my book, The Evolution of Dog Training, we're translating the ebook version into Spanish, because that's a little easier to do.
Very good.
So we're expanding all the time and always looking for opportunities to be able to help people with their dogs.
So we've got The Evolution of Dog Training by Shannon Riley Coyner. And that's on Amazon and everywhere else, right?
Yes.
And then you've got the website is trulyforcefreetraining.com, correct?
Trulyforcefree.com. Just
trulyforcefree.com.
Yes.
Okay, we'll put it up.
So perfect. No problem.
To see it as well, for sure. But I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I'm going to get a clicker.
Awesome. And I do virtual too. So, I never really, COVID kind of pushed us into virtuals.
Right.
So, I have people all over the country who, send us a request, and then we just figure out time zones and you know, schedules. And sometimes I'll either do Zoom or phone call virtuals too. So that's somebody needed questions. Yeah. So that's
possible. Fantastic to know. And so I think that's it for today's episode, but I'm going to get hot dogs. I'm going to get a clicker.
Good.
And I'm going to give it a shot. The cat is rare, but it does come around. It's not always. And I'm going to tell the Sunrise Dog Group about this in the morning as well. And I'm going to go out there with my little clicker once I get it.
Perfect.
Shannon, this is brilliant. I really like it. And the entire whale, dolphin analogy, parrot thing so resonates. It's so true.
Yes. Yes.
So I love that. And I hope to talk to you again. It was really fascinating. And it's
I would love
to
anytime.
Doing.
I just want to help people. Like I said, anywhere. I want you everywhere and anywhere to be able to help your dogs in a positive way.
That's wonderful. All right, that's it for today's episode. And
thank you so
listen
much.
In for the next one. I'll see you again, Shannon.
Who let the dogs out?
So that's it for today's episode of the Dogjevity Show. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will get a chance to win the grand prize drawing to win a year of private concierge, world-class veterinarian care, from number one vet on TikTok, Dr. Adam Christman himself, a $25,000 value. If you and your dog have enjoyed the life-changing results with the Dogjevity Detox formula, just know we're looking for brand ambassadors that are passionate about and believe in organic health for their dogs. And if you think that's you, we're compensating our brand ambassadors generously. We're committed to getting the word out to more dog families. So head on over to dogjevity.com, check out the ambassador program, and join us next time. Who let the dogs out?